It's finally here. Stop into Menards for amazing Black Friday deals. A 54-inch giant snow tube is only $9.99 each. Ladies' slippers are just $6.99 a pair. And a men's heated jacket is $49.99. Ah, there's so many great Black Friday deals. I can't list them all. You'll have to hurry to Menards while supplies last to get these and many more Black Friday deals. Sale good Black Friday through December 1st. See Menards.com for details.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, ladies, gentlemen. Welcome me. Welcome you. I'm Dan. He's Dan. We're here. This is Take the Black. Every week we get together on Wednesdays afternoon. Talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, dragons, penguins, space nuns, and whatever else tickles our fancy. Daniel, Roman, from yes. One Dan to another. How are you doing today?
I'm doing spectacularly today because we have a very exciting show planned, and I'm looking forward to talking about all the different things that all of our dear listeners, friends, colleagues, people who tune into this show should be watching, reading, and otherwise immersing themselves in throughout the month of December. How are you, Dan?
It's a tall order. I'm pretty good. As Victor says, turkeys, which I agree, tomorrow's Thanksgiving here in the United States. For everybody who celebrates, hope you have a good time. For Julie, hey Julie, if you're outside the U.S., just know that tomorrow, while you're doing whatever you usually do, we here in the U.S. will be trying to rouse ourselves from a food-induced torpor after eating too much turkey, ooh, stuffing, nice, and the likes. Daniel, you look cold, says Under Skyline. You do. You're really bundled up. Did the heat go out of your place?
No, the heat's fine. It is drafty here, but I've just been in and out with the dog. And I figured I'm going to keep it real for you guys listening, watching. Audio listeners, you're being deprived right now, but I am in a very big poofy winter vest and a hat because 'tis the season. So why not? I have nothing to hide. Dan, you look very warm, though. That must be nice.
Yeah. I have this great condo, and the heating is excellent. I have friends who bought a house. I wonder if they'll watch this. Probably not. And they bought a house, and it's like multiple levels, but like the air circulation, not that good. Like it kind of gets cold in places where it shouldn't be, hot in places where it shouldn't be. And I'm like, I love my house.
Yeah, that's nice.
Okay, let's not indulge in too much of that. Daniel, you have a bit of a scoop for us.
I do, apparently. I think you definitely got real psyched about this scoop, so we got to talk about it. So basically, Graham McTavish, this is House of the Dragon news, so let's put our House of the Dragon hats on. Graham McTavish, who played the former Lord Commander of the Kingsguard, Sir Harold Westerling, he was doing some interviews this past weekend at a Dutch Comic Con, basically. And he did one with a Dutch outlet, who I don't have the name of handy, the Nerd something. I forget the full name of the outlet. But he basically talked about how he thinks House of the Dragon Season 3, he believes it will start filming in March. And this is interesting for a few reasons. One, because, you know, that's one other person saying early next year, March. You know, we've heard similar things to that from a few cast members. So it kind of confirms probably March is when the show will start filming. But even more exciting to me, exciting but also curious, it means that there's a good chance we're going to see Sir Harold Westerling again next season, which is interesting because... So for book readers, he's dead by this point in the story. He kind of like, I can't remember if he dies of old age or a bad bladder, burst stomach. You never know what normal in air quotes causes people die from in Westeros. But he's not around. So it sounds like they're bringing Graham McTavish back because otherwise, why would he know when they're filming? What do you think about this, Dan? This is interesting.
I have little idea what to think after all the changes they've made. I mean, so Harold Westerling, Lord Commander of the Kingsguard, dies in Fire and Blood, kind of in one of those big time jumps they had in season one where people were getting older. And they let him live in the show. And they had a kind of Barristan Selmy but make it worse scene where he quits the Kingsguard in protest rather than participate in the Aegon coup to put him on the throne in the first season. Yeah. And then he just pieces out and we didn't see him at all in season two. The show doesn't have a super great track record when it comes to altering characters' fates. The other really klutzy one was probably Laenor Velaryon, who they also died in the book and they let live. And then they sort of like half retcon it. So he probably died off screen.
Yeah.
I have no clue how they might bring this character who is dead in the books, but alive in the show back. Personally, I feel like they cast Graham McTavish, who is a pretty big name. He's been an Outlander.
He is.
The Witcher. He's a decent sized name. And then they felt obligated to keep him alive because he's a big ish actor. Because I feel like the story would be best served if he was like dead. But I guess they might have a plan. I don't know what it is. Because if he shows up to help Rhaenyra, it will be Barristan, but worse, the sequel. So I guess I half hope that they do something original with him.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of have to, right? Because I'm going to show my ignorance or just lack of memory of the Kingsguard Knights, but all of them are pretty much accounted for. All of the ones from the book, they're pretty much on the board. Like, we've got Sir, I think Rickard Thorne is one who is relevant in the book. That's the one specifically George R. R. Martin was worried about because he's really relevant through Alicent's youngest or Helaena's youngest son, Maelor, who's not in the show. So now it's kind of like what do they even do with Rickard Thorne? So they have a few between that and now this thing with Sir Harold Westerling. They have a few Kingsguard Knights on the board where it's like they have the knights, but what do they have for them to do? And they are going to have to make some stuff up. That's funny. The Barristan Selmy, but worse. I didn't really think of that. And it is like exactly the same.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty much. So he has to help Rhaenyra, right? Like, he can't just have a change of heart and go back to the Greens. That'd be weird when the last thing we saw him do was storm out because he didn't want to support them.
Maybe he'll help out Otto Hightower, who is also in a completely off-book plot right now. I don't know. I really have no idea.
For whatever reason, I thought of Otto too. And like,
Regarding intelligence, I think mentioned it. Or
oh, did they?
Someone mentioned it. Somebody did.
I did. Okay. I did when I wrote this up. I said maybe
must
he'll
have been
help
you.
Yeah, maybe he'll help Otto just because for whatever reason Otto's coming to mind. Who knows? But it is interesting. I've just been kind of picturing Harold Westerling off in a, they don't have Hawaiian shirts in Westeros, but we'll say a tunic.
He'll invent
some flowers, sewn on. Yeah, he invented it. He's got some sandals. He's enjoying retirement, but somehow he's going to come back into the picture, presumably. McTavish didn't say this outright, but he did talk about, you know, that he was expecting the show to film. So I think it's a fairly safe assumption he's going to be in it.
It's finally here. Stop into Menards for amazing Black Friday deals. A 54-inch giant snow tube is only $9.99 each. Ladies slippers are just $6.99 a pair. And a men's heated jacket is $49.99. Ah, there's so many great Black Friday deals. I can't list them all. You'll have to hurry to Menards while supplies last to get these and many more Black Friday deals. Sale good Black Friday through December 1st. See Menards.com for details. Save big money at Menards.
The other big news that Rohit Kumar is kind of alluding to is that, yeah, if filming is in March, which is now we have actually someone who's associated with the production saying it, why do they wait 8 months after season two ends to film season three? Which is a good question. Rohit Kumar, I don't have an answer for you. This has been maybe the defining problem of the post Game of Thrones big budget genre boom. Whether it's The Witcher, Lord of the Rings, Wheel of Time, all these major shows, The Last of Us, there's these big chunky delays. I'm not sure why. It might have to do with budgets. It might be that they, for a production of this size, it's hard to get that monster moving again, and they need to have time to ramp up. It might have to do with they don't want to expend the resources without being damn sure everything is in order, because it's a lot of money thrown after this. I don't know, but it's definitely been an issue that's been around the past 5, 6, 7 years. And some studios like Apple TV has their silo thing back to back, so they seem to have kind of solved it. But mostly it's still a problem. And I don't know. But that's what's happening.
Yeah, it is curious. That's not something that I think is really a cause for alarm. I do agree with you that it is a problem that a lot of these studios are facing. And Apple does seem to have a good handle on it with Silo, because they pretty much dove straight into production for season two. I think delaying renewals. So it's almost like, I wonder if the risk averseness of studios right now is becoming a factor in this, because you have to figure if they're waiting to renew things, it's possible that affects contracts for people. And like, I know Emma Darcy is like doing a stage play at the moment. So like, you know, when they let these things lapse, it's possible that people have to fill in time elsewhere. And like you said, it's a big ungainly beast that needs to get going versus Thrones, which pretty much went, you know, mostly back to back. I think they've talked about how it was kind of like a most of the year on, five months off, whatever, but like clockwork. So it wasn't we're having a big gap to see if we get renewed. They pretty much had the plan that they went through with every year up until those last seasons, which were just so massive that they needed more time,
bigger and bigger in scale. So the scale did. Probably a factor. Rohit asks, do you think they are changing their own writing decisions due to the backlash of season two? That's the reason for late so filming. I doubt it.
Same.
I'm wondering that too. I mean, I'm sure they must have had a discussion in the room about do we need to do anything? But I think this would have gone this late, even if nothing had happened. But it's going to happen in 2026. We'll get a Knight of the Seven Kingdoms in between. Which, by the way, speaking of Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, I'm getting more excited about that one. I have high hopes for this one, the other Game of Thrones prequel show. I can't wait to finally read the damn book.
Do it.
Imagine I am holding it up right now. It's in the other room, but imagine I am.
I can't reach it. It's behind me.
I want to wait until you and I talk about The Shadow Rising first. But that show's coming down the pike, due out in probably spring of next year. We got new cast members coming in, courtesy of, again, Redanian Intelligence, I believe. Yeah, almost positive.
Yeah, these guys are, yes.
We got Ellie McHale Rowe as Lila the Lovely, Carla Harrison Hodge as Bione, both sex workers at the tournament where Dunk and Egg meet. We got Eric Nolan. I don't know who he plays. Nobody does. This is from left to right, by the way. We got Kara Harris as somebody named Gwyn. We got Mark O'Connor as a musician. Mark O'Connor is apparently the name of a famous fiddle player who's won like 3 Grammys. I don't think it's the same one.
Okay.
I wasn't entirely sure. We got J.B. Moore as a farrier. We're done with the picture now. I don't have the picture. Which is someone who shoes horses' hooves. Got to get those medieval jobs in there.
That's right.
Oh boy. And we got some Irish people named Michael O'Mara and Rian O'Conchibar in unknown roles. Probably another square. You say not bad. Do you know? Do you have any? I'm going to put his name in the chat.
I have
you
no
guys
idea.
Can tell me how you think this would be pronounced.
I was just impressed with your earnest effort. Yes, yes. So I think the interesting thing with these characters is, so there are a lot that we don't know who they're playing, like Eric Nolan. We don't know what character he's playing. Those last two you said, we don't know what roles those are. But all of the named roles, like Leah the Lovely, Bienni, none of those are characters from the book that I recall. So they're probably very minor characters.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Appear at the tournament because this is going to be kind of a big spectacle type tournament affair with all the pageantry and kind of the camp followers, all the pop-up businesses. Like in a previous episode, I think we talked about Tansel, who is like Dunk's love interest. She's a puppeteer at this thing. There are farriers, there are blacksmiths. The farrier might be from the book. I mean, I'm sure Dunk gets his horses Hooves looked at when he's at the tournament. But if he is in the book, I doubt he's even got a name, because that's just a minor thing. But it's exciting to get all these little updates for a Knight of the Seven Kingdoms.
They have to stretch it out. Like, as you said, these are pretty short novellas.
Yes.
And the show will be on the short side as well. It's too short to even really fill out. I am hopeful for it. I think if they approach this with the right... I'm all about adapting something in a way... It's okay to embellish and add as long as you kind of keep the heart of it intact. In fact, it can be fun. I think House of the Dragon might be going on a little off the beaten path. But as long as... I know the Seven Kingdoms kind of add things around the edges that just help support the main thrust of it and add some fun. I'm totally down with it. Yeah. And they have to, if they want to. Boo, 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 boo. I have not. I'm about to. By the time the new year rolls around, I guarantee it'll be done. I'm waiting to do some videos or articles on a book I just finished called The Shadow Rising. And if I get that out of my head, then it'll be all full steam forward on Under the Seven Kingdoms.
That's fair. I know that struggle. You read something, you wanna process it before you get it all muddled in your head by reading the next thing.
Yeah, I don't want to read Knights of the Kingdoms and then I get it. I mistake Dunk for Matt and Egg for Egwene. It'll all be mixed in there together. I don't want that.
Yeah, yeah. The first one, The Hedge Knight, it's only like 180 pages. They're really not that long.
You're like a speed reader, though. You like burn through books in a week.
I am not compared to the booktubers who read constantly every day. But yes, that's fair. I do read a little faster. Don't read the graphic novel. Okay, Boobo. You need to tell us about that, Shade. I have not read it.
Actually, I do, because Boobo, my partner, read the graphic novel and they didn't like it. And I'm actually wondering, is it bad? That's a really good question.
I think
would love to know. Please let me know.
It's hard with graphic novels adapting, especially a writer whose writing is as specifically nuanced as George R. R. Martin. Like, I read the Game of Thrones graphic novels years ago, and thought they were pretty lame, because it's just hard to, you know, there's so much that comes through in his writing, and they kind of pick excerpts and then...
Sure.
Illustrate the rest. I've only read a few that I really thought did justice to his original stories, which were mainly both by Rhea Golden, who's artist who's worked with him for years. So she really captures the spirit of his work really well. But for the most part, I would never recommend doing, you know, the graphic novel version over the prose, especially for a Westeros story.
I'm sure they're fine. It's like Victor says, I'm sure they're good. But yeah, I mean, Martin is a writer first, so I don't think I would. I definitely start with the prose, because that's what he is. Like, he is a writer's writer. Some folks say that the TV show adaptation was much more detailed, didn't even get all the nuance in there.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to it, but I'll get back to you just in a minute.
Exactly.
Yeah. And Julie too. Yeah, they're different than when the book was going to do it. It's okay. You're right. Everything's valid. Everything's cool, but I love a writer who lives to write, and Martin is definitely that.
And Boobo's got a fun point here. So the Game of Thrones graphic novels, you are right. They are written by Daniel Abraham, who is one of the writers for The Expanse. He adapted those into graphic novel. But even, you know, I love Daniel Abraham. It's still just, you know, you're taking a 1,000-page book and you're trying to tell chunks of it in like a 40-page graphic novel. It's an impossible Herculean task, I think, to do that kind of adaptation.
Would you say it's Sisyphusian?
I would.
Okay.
Poor Daniel Abraham. I can't imagine how difficult that was to try
to
pare down. Yeah, sure. That too.
Okay, cool. So it's Herculean, Sisyphusian, and Quixotic.
Yes. I'm not familiar with the last one you said, but I believe that it probably is.
Quixotic is a Don Quixote, the guy who tilts at windmills.
I didn't realize that is Quixotic. Yeah, I know who Don Quixote is, but I've never heard his name verbed.
use some of this fun vocabulary in your Thanksgiving Day meals, people. Enrage everyone around you with what a know-it-all you are. All right. Hello, Cannibal. Good to see you. Let's move on from House of the Dragon, House of the Seven Kingdoms, to our big, fat December guide. It's the last month of the year. We're all going to be eating food or digesting food. There's going to be a lot of time stuck inside while snow falls outside. Not for Julie in Australia, but for a lot of people, including me, where we will be a lot of time to sit down, read a book, take in a TV show, see a movie, and not have to go into the Daystar and be burned by it. So we thought we would give you a solid guide to what's coming in December, what you should watch or read, and why. I think it will hit this kind of like a lightning round without really a set timer, just kind of keep it reasonably brief, or expound for an hour, and we'll take this into the twilight.
That sounds good. Let's expound within reason.
Yes. Okay. We'll go in chronological order. Daniel, first up, how blissed out and excited are you to watch Star Wars Skeleton Crew coming on December 2nd, the new Star Wars TV show about a bunch of tweenagers who meet up with Jude Law and they have to get home in a spaceship?
I think this is from John Watts, who did the Spider-Man movies for Marvel. It'll probably be fun. My excitement for Star Wars shows is, you know, it's so low that it feels not so low. It's so minuscule that I almost feel bad shitting on it. Because it feels like kicking a horse when it's down or whatever. So I'm mildly excited. I'm sure I'll watch it, but I'm also just, they've really burnt me out. I've got the franchise malaise. How about you, Dan? Are you psyched for Jude Law with space children?
I think Victor has the right idea. I'm going to wait to see if this show gets any sort of buzz. I think that's fair. Yeah. I'm not going to jump on it, but if people seem to like it, we'll be reviewing it. We found someone to review it, someone who's eager to do it. So I'm looking forward to that. You know, on winteriscoming.net or winteriscoming.com, winteriscoming.eu. Don't go there. next up. Oh, Daniel, there's a bunch of books coming out. Why don't you, which of these should we be interested in?
Yes. So December 3rd, which is the first Tuesday of December, is probably the last big book release day of the year. There are a bunch of titles coming out. The one I'm going to really push and say, if you like martial arts like Cobra Kai, you like martial arts fantasy, maybe some Final Fantasy like science fantasy type worlds. Third book in the Combat Codes. This is book one, Combat Codes by Alexander Darwin. Blacklight Born, that comes out on December 3rd. Also, Rebel Blade by Davinia Evans, which is like an alchemy fantasy city type story. That's also December 3rd. And Ardent Violet and the Infinite Eye, which is a glam rock space opera. Ragtag band of musicians tries to save the world from nefarious space AIs. Seems like a really good time. That's the second book in that series. I do not remember the title of the first. I think it's like August Kitko and the Killer Mechas from Space or something like that. Alex White is the name of the author. So a lot of good books coming out at the beginning of the month.
Very cool. And right after that, and Bubo, don't worry, we are going to get to Mr. Sanderson in a second here.
Oh, yes.
We have not forgotten. But first, on December 5th, to Max, we have Creature Commandos, which is the first official show in this newly branded DC Cinematic Universe overseen by James Gunn and Peter Safran.
Extended universe.
Shut up. It's it's an animated show. It seems a little Suicide Squad-y.
Yes.
It could be fun. I'm not making this one a priority, but if it gets buzzed, maybe I'll check it out.
Yeah, same.
But I know one thing that you will definitely make a priority is on December 6th, Brandon Sanderson is releasing Wind and Truth, the
fifth book
his Stormlight Archive series, which has been running for years now. Big old fantasy epic. Pretty important book. A lot of people looking forward to this one. Daniel, why are they excited about it?
Yeah, so this is the fifth mainline book in the Stormlight Archive. There have been a few novellas too, but this is basically the end of the first arc of the Stormlight Archive. It's a 10-book series. This is book 5. After this, he's taking a hiatus. There will be a time jump. Hiatus from Stormlight, not writing, because Brandon Sanderson doesn't know how to not write. He'll be working on other stuff. So this is kind of like the culmination of these first 5 books. We'll find out the fates for characters like Kaladin and Shallan and Dalinar and see what happens to them. I am really excited for this book. I said that the previous day was like the last big book release day, because this actually comes out on a Friday in the US, which is really abnormal. And it's basically just because Sanderson is a powerful enough author that he can ask to release books on any day of the week that he wants. And his convention, Dragonsteel Nexus, is that weekend, and he's releasing it during his convention. So yeah, Wind and Truth coming out December 6th, probably the biggest fantasy book of this year. Like, kind of no question. Like, this is the most notable fantasy release. So hell yeah. Super psyched for Bubo and everyone else who is excited for that book.
Victor thinks that he might announce a live action Stormlight adaptation when the book drops.
I doubt it. I think I have seen speculation, online. I've seen a few booktubers like Daniel Green put on tinfoil hats and kind of talk about wondering if there will be an adaptation announcement at Dragonsteel Nexus, because Sanderson has talked quite a bit about how he has been trying to get adaptations made for years. I'm not saying that we won't get any adaptation announcement, but I think if we get one, it's probably going to be Mistborn before Stormlight, because Mistborn is just a much more compact, doable series. Like, Stormlight is the biggest, most ambitious thing out of anything he's written. And I think it, especially at this point, because all of these take place in a fictional universe called the Cosmere. They're all on different planets around the Cosmere, so there's a little bit of crossover. By the point we're at now in Stormlight, the crossover is a little more pronounced. So I can't imagine a world where Stormlight is the first adaptation in a Cosmere television movie thing. Universe. So maybe Mistborn, though. That's just my thought, but we'll see what happens next month.
We'll see what happens. I've read Mistborn. I haven't read Stormlight. I haven't read the Seven Kingdoms yet. Give me time. So I got to work up to all that.
Yes. What's next, Dan?
Okay, I don't know this one either. On December 10th, an Amazon show called Secret Level. What that?
I know about this one. This is weirdly like one that was hardly on my radar, and it's probably one of the shows I'm most excited for. So Secret Level is an anthology series coming to Amazon, and each episode is kind of, it's got a different animation style, and they're based on different video games. So it's a bunch of different episodes, standalone episodes based on like beloved video game franchises. Like, there's one about Mega Man, which, lifelong Mega Man stan. I will gladly show up for an episode of animated Mega Man television. They've got like Warhammer 40K in there, Yakuza, a few other video games, but they're not like adapting them. They're like stories inspired by them, meant to be the love of the thing. So
I have heard of this.
Okay. It's the same people, I'm pretty sure, who made Love, Death, and Robots. So if you liked Love, Death, and Robots, you're probably going to want to check out Secret Level on December 10th.
I agree with Victor. Something like this,
yeah,
it's surprising it's happening now, because video games are like the big new source of IP. So yeah, I'm sure we'll see more of this kind of thing.
Yeah,
Daniel,
totally.
You're having all the things. I also don't know what our December 10th release of Club Cantango by Elaine Bowie is. What's that?
Yeah, that's another book. We'll mention this one briefly. So Club Cantango is like a sci-fi book where a single mom on the galaxy's first like international space city. She runs a micro casino, and then her business partner turns up dead, and she realizes this AI contract she had entered into has gone awry, and basically has to race against other versions of herself to win her life back. So yeah, I'm excited for that book, and that is out on December 10th.
Very cool. Are you but done I with your long string about- of things, or could you ask me something?
I'm going to ask you because I don't know anything about this next
Thank
one.
You. That would be
oh, wait. Nice. Wait. Maybe I.
What?
Okay. 100 Years of Solitude is coming December 11th. What is this, Dan? Yeah. This sounds familiar.
Yeah. 100 Years of Solitude is considered a classic of Spanish language literature by Gabriel Garcia Marquez.
That's right.
A 1967 novel, I think. It's on here because it's always been a little magical realism. It's not exactly fantasy, but it's like this family in the 60s starts a utopian country that kind of is cut off from the world, sort of like South American Wakanda. I don't want to diminish it. And then it gets slowly corrupted from the inside over the course of many, many, like the story takes place over many generations. It's considered a classic. It's pretty ambitious. It's coming to Netflix on December 11th. Frankly, it seems a little high-minded for Netflix. I don't know if they do like literary adaptations very well, but it's a great book. It's a classic book, and anybody who takes a crack at it deserves my interest. I hope they don't botch it.
Yeah, that is interesting. I do remember seeing that and being like, oh, this is something we should be maybe talking about a little bit more, because you're right, the novel is kind of like considered like a classic of speculative totally. fiction. But yeah, so they're dropping all 8 episodes at once. Of course they are, and I won't lie, it does make me a little nervous. I feel like the thing I'm learning with some of these Netflix shows is it depends on how much creative control the people making the show really had. So we'll see. But I hope it's good, because we've never had an adaptation of that book before, and it is probably very deservedly due one.
Has there never been one? It's a pretty famous novel. I don't recall ever seeing one. Also, can I complain about something really quickly? I've been watching Netflix recently. I've been watching this Delicious and Dungeon show and Detroiters. Yeah. And Netflix has commercials now, which it never used to have for me. But they're all like 4 other Netflix shows. It's like they keep airing this commercial where Giancarlo Esposito does the Wednesday dance. And another one about some race car show called Sienna. And I'm like, I'm already paying for Netflix. What are you advertising to me exactly? But just a weird little sidebar for people over here.
Okay,
moving on. On December 13th, we have on Showtime, I assume, Dexter Original Sin. Who wants a Dexter prequel? Young serial killer Dexter. He's young. He's learning to be a serial killer with a heart of gold. Kill people, but only bad people. This is after the Dexter sequel we had a couple of years ago. Now we got a prequel. Who wants more Dexter?
Not me. Not me. I feel like Dexter is one of those interesting series where, like, I loved the first many seasons of Dexter, like the first 7 seasons. I really didn't fall off on Dexter until the final season, which was just bad. I even liked parts of the final episode, but the fact that they are like milking Dexter now, like we have this, there are other spinoffs coming. I'm like, for the love of God, let Dexter rest. I don't know if it was ever meant to go on forever. So Dexter, it makes me very nervous that they're doing this stuff with Dexter, and it's got things to prove. Will you be watching this?
No, I agree with you. It does feel like a strange series to keep resuscitating like this. But somebody must be watching it. I agree, Julie. Killing is never okay. But in Dexter, I don't know. They try to tell you that he is. I watched the original show.
He can't help it.
I fell off before.
He can only harness it.
I don't know if that's the message I want to be sending to the youth. But at least Dexter's problem was he was a serial killer who only killed bad people, and the show sort of made it seem like that was all right. I don't know. It's been a long while. I'd be fine if Dexter died off, but they keep bringing it back, so I assume somebody's watching.
Yes. Yep.
Anyway.
I guess so.
After that, we got a movie also on December 13th. We have The Lord of the Rings, The War of the Rohirrim, an animated Lord of the Rings movie set sometime before kind of the main events, the main trilogy we all know, about Rohan, the horse people. And I will say, this one looks interesting. I think I'll wait to see reviews, but I love Lord of the Rings. I think the animation looks cool. If it's good, I'd be into it. But if it's bad, I won't.
Yeah, that is pretty fair. I am cautiously interested. This is another thing where I am, you know, hoping that it goes well, but I feel like there are just so many ways it couldn't. But I hope it's a good time. And the trailers have all looked pretty good. This is kind of a funny factoid. So it's 183 years before Lord of the Rings, apparently. The War of the Rohirrim, it's the story of Helm Hammerhand, building Helm's Deep, blah, blah, blah. That is right about the same amount of time that House of the Dragon is before Game of Thrones. So apparently 180-ish, roughly, years is the correct amount of time to do a prequel.
That's the sweet spot. It's got, like, Brian Cox in it. It could be really cool. Totally. Lord of the Rings is totally interesting enough to adapt as a one-time animated film. I'm a little more shaky on the Gollum movie, but this one seems like it could be good, but we'll see what happens. Moving on, next we have, okay, now we got some probable turds, but we don't know, we're not sure.
Probable turds.
We got Kraven the Hunter, also on December 13th, opening opposite The War of the Rohirrim. Do you want a movie made in the tradition of Morbius and the Venom movies about one of Spider-Man's, like, D-tier villain characters, Kraven the Hunter? You? Okay, I don't know anything about Kraven the Hunter. B-tier? He wasn't on the animated show.
B-minus. He totally was on the animated show. B-minus tier. Yeah, Kraven is, he's a big game hunter. He's got a sense of honor, and he wants to help hunt the ultimate prey, which of course is Spider-Man. But Spider-Man's not in
this movie.
Exactly. Spider-Man's not in this movie. You know, similar to Star Wars, it doesn't feel fun to crap on Sony villain movies to me anymore because we've had enough. Morbius was hilariously bad to the point where I actually enjoyed my time with it because it was so bad. Nice. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure that the comparison I made was it was like The Room of comic book movies. Do you know The Room, Dan?
Of course I know The Room.
Yeah, yeah. It was like that, but for a comic book movie, and I had a good time. So Kraven, I have rock bottom expectations, but I will probably watch it when it's out on streaming, DVD, whatever, because I'm curious. And, you know, I'll watch Aaron Taylor Johnson put on a fun accent and ham it up. Sure.
Sweet. Okay, good. I hope it does well. Maybe it won't be a turd. Another one that could be very good. I probably won't see it. We're moving on to December 20th. Have Mufasa, The Lion King. This is so confusing. The Disney live action sequel to its live action remake of The Lion King. I'm putting live action in quotes because is it really live action if it's about a bunch of CGI animated animals who were just animated to look photorealistic? Debate amongst yourselves. Anyway, they adapted they remade The Lion King in live action. Now they're making a sequel to it, or maybe a prequel. I don't know.
It's a prequel.
Is it like about Mufasa?
Yeah.
Like his childhood or something?
Yes, and it's about how young Mufasa came to rule Pride Rock. This is another one of those where, I agree with your point about the live action and air quotes. I had that thought with How to Train Your Dragon, too. Even though that's got people.
There are actors in it.
There are actors in it, but then, like, Toothless looks exactly the same as the animation. It's like, what are we doing here? Like, this is the exact same animated dragon. It's not a real dragon. Mufasa feels real soulless to me to do that kind of a prequel cash grab. How can we get more lions on the screen? And I'm not the target audience. Like, I'm not here to crap on children's movies and say they're bad. Like, I just cynical Daniel is like, what are we doing here with this? Which is ironic because the next movie we're going to talk about, I actually think is an example of a animated movie that is the opposite of this. So
okay, what is it? Oh, it's Sonic the Hedgehog 3, also coming out on December 20th.
Yeah.
Daniel, do you like to draw Sonic in the side of your notebook?
If I could draw, I would. I draw little knuckles and little tails there with them because they're all pretty cool. So the Sonic movies are one of those rare instances of video game movies that have done pretty well. They've got great voice casts. Sonic the Hedgehog 3 has Keanu Reeves playing Shadow the Hedgehog. Sonic,
really?
Yeah, they had Idris Elba as Knuckles in the last one. So like, I feel like I've seen a lot of people very excited for this Sonic the Hedgehog movie. Well,
they're successes.
They were total successes. So this is one where I'm like, it doesn't feel like, it feels like the demand is there for this movie, for another Sonic movie that brings in more characters people like. So like, I'm happy for the people who really want to see this. I haven't seen the first two, so I won't be seeing Sonic 3 when it comes out because I haven't seen the first two. But at some point I'll watch them all because I've heard, you know, nothing but pretty good things about these movies. They seem fun.
If my nephew's parents want to dump him out on me for a day, I will gladly take him to Sonic 3. But yeah, I'm probably not going to go see it myself. By the way, Julie, we'll definitely be getting to a Best of 2024 show in the near future. Watch out for December. Here we come. We'll be doing Best 2024, things in 2025 want to look forward to. It'll all be happening. But for right now, just about December. Okay, I swear I will start getting positive very soon, but I have one more thing that I haven't simply won't see. It's the third season of What If, the Disney show, where they do alternate kind of realities where different things happened in Marvel movies. What if Captain America, but he was an 18th century washerwoman or something. Probably not that, but like something around in that area. Have you watched these, Daniel? What If?
What if you watched them? Maybe it would get another season. No, so this, I believe, is the final season of What If. I saw the first season and I liked it. I mean, it was dark for a Marvel show because most of the episodes revolve around what if various Avengers died in grisly ways. Like, there are a few episodes like that where it's like, damn, Marvel, you really went for it. There are some great characters that came out of this, like Captain Carter, which is the what if Captain America, you know, it was Peggy Carter instead of Steve Rogers who got the serum. There were a lot of things like that I really enjoyed, but I feel like Marvel has basically pulled all support for this show because they did the same thing with season two where they like shat it out on like the day before Christmas, like one episode a day, and no one watched it and no one talked about it. So even more than like the actual quality of What If, which season one was pretty decent. I have no idea about season two, but I think it's pretty clear that Marvel has signaled they could care less about this show because they're doing very little to promote it and they're releasing it in a really like disadvantageous way. Like, to drop a whole season or like one episode a day, like right before Christmas of this show with barely any promotion is just like, it feels like a vote of no confidence from the studio, I guess is what I'm trying to say. I mean,
according to Victor, it's been a bright spot for the past years, the MCU.
And it's not a bad show. Like it.
So, curious. I guess it must be not be getting tons of eyeballs on it, I suppose. But one thing I do intend to watch, well, unless the reviews are terrible, not sure if it'll, hopefully in the theaters, is on Christmas Day, they're coming out with a remake of Nosferatu, which is a 1930s vampire movie that's been around for a long time, obviously, almost 100 years, starring the Idols, Lily Rose Depp, as the girl. Oh. And I believe the guy who's Pennywise as Nosferatu, who is just Dracula with Sweetable's fire filed off, yes, by Robert Eggers, who did The Lighthouse, who did The Witch, who did The Northman. He loves the. I think this is cool. I like this movie. I think Robert Eggers is a really cool director. I think it's made interesting stuff. Yeah, if they had released, you know, this past weekend when Wicked and Gladiator 2 came out, they tried to do a whole like Barbenheimer thing where it's like, see Glicked, like Gladiator 2 Wicked. It's best to hear about this. It didn't work. There's a reason that you're
clearly
you're not responding. It didn't work. It didn't fit. Had they done Wicked and Nosferatu, I think that would have worked. Like Wosferatu. I'm not sure what it would have been, the portmanteau, but I would have indulged in that because that I think that looks fun.
That's pretty fair. That's pretty fair.
Prestige horror is fun.
Yeah, it is. I feel like that could be a really good time. I love that's one where I'm like, hey, that's fun. They're releasing it on Christmas and it's a horror movie.
Yeah.
Feels like it'll be a good time. I'm really curious about that one too. And you're right, it is. I forget which Skarsgård, Bill maybe, is playing the creature. I think it's Bill. We'll go with Bill for 200. But yeah, I did not hear about Glicked, and it makes me cringe in the soul. But now I'm just picturing people showing up in like painted green, but with a toga on. Or a witch hat and, you know, a breastplate and loin skirt.
Well, now that sounds fun. See, that would have been in for.
Fair.
You can't make that kind of the cat. That Barbara Hammer's a fun kind of grassroots thing. But I will see Nosferatu, unless its reviews are terrible.
Cool.
I think it sounds cool. I will also be watching the hell out of the second season of Squid Game, which comes on December 26th, the day after Christmas. Second season.
Yeah.
Squid Game, the most popular show in the history of Netflix. Squid Game, a brutal satire of our capitalistic excess. Squid Game, a thrilling South Korean drama with action, thrills, mystery, and suspense. Squid Game, it's a damn good show.
Wow.
I'll watch this. I loved the first season. A lot of people loved the first season. And it sounds like the guy who makes it, whose name escapes me, has a lot of conviction and really wants to make this a show that has something to say and that is of a high quality. And obviously, I do not think he had control over whether Netflix could turn it into a reality show, which they did.
Yes, I think pretty clearly he probably did not, because it kind of betrays the whole spirit of the show in the first place. But I agree with you that I do think this is a pretty clear example of a creator. You know, he was trying to get this made for years, this show, and couldn't get any studios to sign on to it. So it seems like the sort of show where there is a lot of passion behind it. I love the first season of Squid Game too. Victor says Squid Game, a great one season show, which is going to be interesting because I think originally he had planned it just as one season and Netflix said, oh no. That did far too well for us to let you go away with our wheelbarrowfuls of prospective cash. I am hopeful that he was able to turn out something good, though, for season two. And I'll definitely be watching this. No question. Well, Dan.
It seems unnecessary. But I will say, I mean, the first season ends with a clear tee up for more. So I don't think at a minimum that they made him do it after the fact. It must have been, maybe they made him do it when it started, but I mean, but the first season ends with like a, I'm going to stop you guys. So it's not like it's been totally grafted on.
I think he said that.
You're crap.
I'm pretty sure. And don't ask me to go find the interview, but I'm pretty sure he said it somewhere that he intended it as the one season. So it was meant to be kind of an ambiguous tee up, rather than a very clear, here you go, we're doing season two type thing. But either way, you're right. It did leave off in such a way that it doesn't feel unnatural to do more.
As Robert Smiley asked, talking Game of Thrones, Robert Smiley, we talked about Game of Thrones a bit and House of the Dragon, the Seven Kingdoms. We can do it more, but you mostly missed that segment.
Rewind, Robert. Hey,
why not stick around for our next segment? What are we watching? Or we talk about what are we watching? And we ask what you're watching. If you're watching Thrones or House of the Dragon or somehow got a hold of my Seven Kingdoms things, tell us. We'd love to know. Daniel, what are you watching these days?
A lot, it feels. The thing that is taking up the most of my brain space is that Arcane just finished its second and final season. And man, that show just floored me. I loved the final episodes. It is in the running for one of, I think, the best shows of the year. Up there probably with Shogun. I'm sure Interview with the Vampire and other such vaunted television shows, because that's similar to Squid Game season one. That's another instance where they clearly had a lot of creative control and they really just tried their absolute damnedest to make the thing they wanted to make. And I think it just turned out really well. So yeah, loved Arcane. I'm watching Silo, which if you faithful viewers, listeners, friends, if you are also excited about Silo and watching Silo, the third episode dropped early today because Apple hates well-laid plans. And also because they wanted to surprise you before Thanksgiving. So episode three is actually out now, and I think it is a very strong episode of the show. I hesitate to be like, it's the best one yet, even though it is, because it just feels like that becomes hyperbole, but it is the best episode of the show so far, because it kind of brings all our characters onto the same episode of the show and really hits the ground running. So yeah, good stuff. Beyond that, Dune Prophecy, which I'm not going to lie, Dan, I'm really not feeling super much. Are you still watching Dune Prophecy?
Yeah, I just got the new screener. I've been really liking it. This last episode, I loved the horror sequence in the spice agony that they make the young girl go through. I thought that was great. I liked that she died. Well, we'll see what happens. I liked the royal stuff where Emily Watson is trying to worm her way into the court. Yeah, I have been enjoying it. What isn't working for you?
So I feel like... So there are things that I like. I do like, is it Emily Watson who plays Valia? Wow, I really like her. Travis Fimmel. Travis Fimmel's so fun because it's like, you don't get Travis Fimmel to play different characters. You just get Travis Fimmel to play Travis Fimmel in your show. So I've been enjoying that because I like him. I know that you had an editorial talking about how it wasn't copying Game of Thrones, because Dune was doing great house stuff, but I do kind of feel like the show is taking notes from Game of Thrones, the show. The amount of nudity feels really forced to me.
Yeah, that scene was basically pornography.
Yeah, and like I don't have a problem with nudity in a show, but it feels kind of incongruous with what I've read of Dune to have scenes like that, because like, so far as I know, and I haven't read all the Dune books because there are there are just so many of them,
so many.
But that doesn't really strike me as Dune style. It feels like there was the nudity bro in the room, like a nudity producer being like, we need some in this episode. So stuff like that I'm not super loving because it just feels kind of tacked on.
It was just the one scene, but yes, that one scene was basically softcore. Hardcore.
There was also a sex scene in the previous episode. I'm pretty sure in the next week on Dune Prophecy, it showed a bit of another sex scene. So
it's a bit of a sex scene, yeah.
Like, again, not that I mind this, but it feels, once the curtain comes down enough that I'm like, oh, it feels like there was a producer in the room saying you needed this, it starts to lose me a little bit. But just in general, this episode, you're right, the spice agony thing, that was really cool. That was probably one of my favorite parts of the episode. That and the showdown between Desmond Hart and Valia Harkonnen with the voice. So Dune Prophecy, I've just been kind of slow to really catch on to it. But by the end of this episode, I am intrigued. I want to watch more. I'm waiting for it to feel a little more like Dune, I guess, than like, you know, taking some of those cues that have been successful for HBO more than Dune cues that are successful for Dune. Does that make sense?
I hear you. It does. And it feels like a general opinion is with you. I guess I think I'm an outlier. I have been liking it. And I don't think it's a wannabe Game of Thrones. I think most of this is there in Dune. I mean, the nudity, HBO wants you to get naked and do stuff. But, sure. You know, whatever. I'm okay with that. Generally speaking, yeah, I've been liking it. And I just got the new screener and I want to watch it, probably not tonight because I want to do more reviews. Also, I've done a lot of interviews with the cast, so it's in my interest to like it. So if you're like me and you're loving Dune Prophecy, come to winteriscoming.com to read all the interviews with the cast members.
Yeah,
I've been digging it. And I'm sorry it's not hitting for as many people.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a bad show by any means, but I am waiting for it to really grab me by the throat, because so far it's just making me basically mad that I can't watch Raised by Wolves instead, because it got pulled from HBO, and that also has Travis Fimmel as a weird otherworldly space guy. But yeah, so watching that, going to continue to watch that. The only other thing that I have been watching that I want to shout out is called AP Bio, which is a comedy to break things up that is now streaming on Netflix. I assume this was a Peacock show at some point, because there are like four seasons of it already. And the reason I bring it up is because, so it's got Glenn Howerton from Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Dennis, who's basically, he goes to be a science teacher at a high school because he's disgraced from Harvard. And he just wants to get back at his rival, who is played by House of the Dragon star Tom Bennett, Ulf White. Yeah, and he is a plucky British author who's very, very fun. So that has been nice to break up all the very heavy other shows, because Arcane made me tear up a bunch. Dune is not a light show. And Silo is pretty heavy right now, too. So.
Yes, a lot of heavy stuff going on. Victor thinks found Arcane, which I haven't watched, impenetrable. They went to a watch party. Interesting. It definitely has a hugely passionate fan base, which you are a member.
Yes,
I have not watched it yet. I'm going to take the plunge sooner or later, because, I mean, you said so many wonderful things.
It's good.
There is that barrier to entry where it just looks different.
I
don't like difference. I want the same thing over and over again.
Which is fair. You know, I don't have a problem with animated shows. Like, I loved Netflix's Castlevania. Like, as long as the show's good, I love a good animated show. But I can understand that impenetrable, because it is a very dense show out of the gate. Throws a bunch of lore at you. Not an exposition. Sure. It doesn't give you the Dune lore dump. It's just like, we're in the world. Go. You're going to pick it up. But through this story of these two sisters, I think it does a good job, but I do totally, when people say it's impenetrable, because I have heard that before, I'm like, that's fair. This is not going to be for everyone, but I think the people who it is for, it is really, really resonating with.
It has clearly touched them. We got to wrap this up. We're going pretty long.
We are.
Victor also says that he's watching The Beauty of the Shadows. I'm watching that as well. Nice. I'm going to miss that show when it's gone. That show is so much fun.
Also and same.
I'm going to wrap up before it goes downhill. But yeah, that show's great. And I'm sorry. I mean, it was when it's gone. I also have to say, before we get to the lightning round, I watched Wicked again. I saw it twice. I loved it both times. I cried both times. I was like trying to hold back the mail. I was like during the ballroom scene. Oh, so good. I'm someone who likes musicals a lot. And I almost never get a good one of the movies. And to have one that really knows what to do with a proper singing, dancing cast is very refreshing. Nice. And all like the nuance from the show is preserved. That director, John M. Chu, just knows what he's doing. He casts great actors and just lets them rip. I really like it a lot. And
that's awesome.
This is going to lead to some kind of musical revolution now that it's made a ton of money. We're getting a Hamilton movie sooner or later. Sooner.
Oh, sure. How have we not gotten a Hamilton movie yet? That is Hollywood.
Hollywood wasn't persistent enough.
We're no leaving money on the table. Yeah, but for Hamilton, success, they'll show up.
My theory has always been that the reason we don't get Hollywood shows as movies sooner is that the Hollywood producers must guard the rights jealously
Gotcha.
The Broadway producers must guard the rights jealously because they're afraid that a movie will decrease ticket sales.
Ooh.
I don't know any other explanation for why we wouldn't have gotten like a Hamilton, or why it took 30 years to get a Cats and nobody wanted it by that point, or Phantom of the Opera, or all that stuff. Like, it just makes no sense. It's got to be because they guard it. But if Hollywood is prioritized to make musical movies because they think they can make a lot of money out of it, they'll offer more. They'll pound on the door harder. And I think a big hit like Wicked could lead to that kind of thing becoming more common.
Yeah, you're probably not wrong.
All right. Let's move on to the Wick News Lightning Round. I'm sorry. I didn't realize how long we've been talking.
It's been great.
Where we had a lot to talk over about. Some stories we couldn't get to anybody on the show and give our 20-second opinions on it. No more, no less. Daniel, I will start with you. These are vaguely ordered because I think you are going to know about the odd-numbered ones. Daniel, nice. I'm going to say some words and you're tell me what they mean. Amazon is making a TV series based on a book series called The Captives' War. What's that?
That is the new book series from the writers of The Expanse, James S. A. Corey. This also comes with the announcement that they are launching their own production company with the showrunner from The Expanse show and one of its long-running directors. They are doing The Captives' War. Mercy of Gods is the first book. It's great. It's kind of more out there sci-fi about this insectoid alien race that conquers a human planet. Really cool. If you like The Expanse, watch it or read it so I don't need to talk longer than 20 seconds, which I have. All right. This is some Percy Jackson news. So Courtney B. Vance will replace Lance Reddick as Zeus in Percy Jackson season 2.
Yeah, Lance Reddick, of course, classic actor, The Wire, John Wick, passed away earlier this year, and he'll be replaced by Courtney B. Vance, who won an Emmy for Lovecraft Country, but in the Hunt for Red October. Great actors both. Sorry to lose Lance Reddick, but Courtney B. Vance seems like a more than adequate replacement. And I'll probably watch that whenever it comes around. Sure, why not? Daniel's laughing at something, but who knows?
Our next lightning round.
All right. Oh, yeah. Daniel, the episode title for the season 5 premiere of The Boys came out. It's titled 15 Inches of Sheer Dynamite. What do you think of that?
I think it's going to be ridiculous because it's The Boys. So that title takes its name from Love Sausage, which is a soup who showed up in the Herogasm episode, who can stretch his member to be a deadly tentacle spear. It's The Boys, ladies and gentlemen, friends. What more do you expect? All right, we've got another episode title. This is for the season 2 premiere of Squid Game. Yeah. It will be called Bread and Lottery.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's going to be good. I can feel it. I think Squid Game is going to be good. I don't know what Bread and Lottery means. It sounds like Bread and Circuses, which is the old phrase about keep them entertained, the masses, and then they won't revolt against you. I think the guy seems smart enough to know what he's referencing. I'm looking forward to it. Play tic-tac-toe and die if you lose. Whatever. It's going to happen. Squid Game season 2.
Yep.
Daniel, there's a new Witcher book coming, releasing in Poland. In 2 days, called The Witcher, Crossroads of Ravens.
Yeah, so this is set during Geralt's teenage years. That is a rough translation of the title. We don't know for sure what American title or English title they're going to use yet. I just think this is insane because they only announced this title like a week ago because the Polish publishing industry is just built different. So they announced this stuff. It's coming out in like 2 days. But very happy for Polish readers. Enjoy that.
Nice.
All right, Dan. So Outlander stuff. Sam Heughan and Catriona Balfe, they opened up. Oh, they're open to returning to do an Outlander movie to finish adapting the book series.
Because I know the show is not going to get through all the book series. There are like 10 books. One's not out yet. The TV show has 8 seasons. They might get up to like book 8 or 9-ish. But eventually, people seem to like this. I mean, why not? And I'm going to say, I think they're pronounced Sam Heughan and Catriona Balfe.
I'm sure you're right. Fully believe your belief.
All right. Going back to Arcane. You love Arcane.
Yes.
Arcane voice actor Ellen Thomas will narrate the audiobook for Ambessa, Chosen of the Wolf. Danny, what do all those words mean?
Yeah, so Ambessa was the main villain of Arcane Season 2. She is a warmonger, older woman who is very, very interesting and conniving and cynical, but also awesome. So the actor who played her is narrating this audiobook. It comes out in February by author C.L. Clarke. This is going to be a really good tie-in novel. I'm calling it now.
Kicking.
And let's end with a spot of video game news. Which apparently makes me British. Don't ask me why. So Game of Thrones King's Road I don't have an answer, Dan. Maybe because I want to be on the Game of Thrones King's Road. So it's a video game. It's an action game where you're in the Night's Watch. What do we need to know about this, Dan?
We don't know that it's a mobile game. I will say the footage does look more like a video game than a lot of other Game of Thrones video games that I've seen, which means like you're like control a guy and you're going up and fight little creatures and then like run out at you. They've never made that. It always seemed like they leave money on the table. I have like a really big Game of Thrones game. I don't know if this is going to be it, but it looks like a step closer to something people want. Daniel, I'm actually going to add one on because somebody brought up during the show, the Captain America reshoots. Apparently, Captain America Brave New World, the next movie, came out or had another test screening and it didn't go well. And they're considering reshoot.
Oh, man. I think it makes me really nervous. I feel like Captain America Brave New World is one of those that they need to get right because it's Sam Wilson's first movie as Captain America. They're trying to redeem themselves after a run of stinkers or not hugely great movies. And Deadpool and Wolverine is a very hard act to follow, and that's next. We'll see what happens.
Okay. Everybody, thanks for watching this. This show went a little long because we just love chatting with each other, with you, with the world, the universe, and everything. Please give us a like. Give us a subscribe. We're trying to get to a million subscribers, and we're only 990,000 away. So please do what you can to help us there. We're also available in podcast form wherever they're available, be it iTunes, YouTube Music, wherever. And come back here. Come here every Wednesday, 2 p.m. CST, to watch us gab and gab with us. Maybe next week's show will be even longer when it's Take the Black, 3.5 hours of sheer dynamite. Come back for that. Talk to you later.
Nice. Take care, all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
It's finally here. Stop into Menards for amazing Black Friday deals. A 54-inch giant snow tube is only $9.99 each. Ladies' slippers are just $6.99 a pair. And a men's heated jacket is $49.99. Ah, there's so many great Black Friday deals. I can't list them all. You'll have to hurry to Menards while supplies last to get these and many more Black Friday deals. Sale good Black Friday through December 1st. See Menards.com for details. Save big.